The Finance Committee meeting to order today. We have two pieces of legislation that we're going to be going over with the committee. It's, we will not be taking any public testimony today. I'm joined today by my co-chairman, Senator Stedman, Senator Ellis, Senator Egan, and Senator Thomas. Senator Olson has just joined us, and we should be hearing from Senator Huggins in short order. But again, as I said, we have two appropriation bills. The governor's wanted quick action on the deferred maintenance. We're going to be going over that, but we wanted to get this particular piece of legislation on the table as quickly as possible. We'll be having some discussion with the other body on what action to take during the next coming weeks. But the Senate Bill 253 is the deferred maintenance and replacement legislation. And the second one that we're going to be hearing today is Senate Bill 254, the supplemental capital and other appropriations. Before we get started, I'd like to remind people to turn off their electronics, their phones, or any other electronic equipment that they might have. And I'd invite Karen Rayfield, the OMB director, to the table. Morning, Karen. If there's anyone else that you want to join you at the table today, that'd be fine. I see Senator Huggins is joining us. We do have the breakdown of some 30 items that I would like the Karen to go over for the information of the public, watching public, and for the legislators. Karen?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. For the record, Karen Rayfield with the Office of Management and Budget. I understand my my task here this morning is to give you and the committee a very high-level overview of both of the supplemental requests that are in front of you, starting with the deferred maintenance bill, and I'm happy to do that. There are agency folks in the room and also online if there are specific detailed questions the committee would like an answer for this morning so that we can move as quickly as possible. Senate Bill 253 is the governor's request for deferred maintenance. It's the first year of a five-year plan to address a deferred maintenance backlog across the state. The governor is committed to creating jobs by addressing deferred maintenance and putting our small and medium-sized contractors to work. This is a necessary step in order for us to preserve our state-owned assets. As you know, across the state facilities, there's about 2,300 buildings and about a $1.9 billion backlog of deferred maintenance projects. As you recall, the governor included that first $100 million in the December 14 budget for the FY11 fiscal year. He's asking your consideration to accelerate that by moving it up and approving it earlier so that we can get the funding out on the street for projects to occur this spring and over the next construction season. So if I might, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to briefly highlight the bill itself. It's 8 pages long. There are 5 sections in the bill. Section 1 of the bill is the specific requests by department. Section 2 is just a simple funding summary of by department, a total funding summary, and Section 3. Section 4 is the lapse provisions of the bill, and Section 5 is an immediate effective date. If you look at the bill itself, it's very straightforward, Mr. Chairman, and I'll just quickly highlight by agency. We have some departments that requested, for example, a single project, and some departments requested some allocations within a total amount. So I would like to just highlight those for you. Department of Administration's allocation of the $100 million is $7,250,000. They're proposing to split that between two areas, their facilities deferred maintenance at about $4,250,000 and the SATS telecommunications system deferred maintenance at $3 million. The Department of Corrections has $6.5 million in deferred maintenance projects, and you'll see in their backup what their proposed distribution of those will be. Under the Department of Education, we're requesting $1.7 million for deferred maintenance at Mount Edgecombe High School. They also go into greater detail in their backup of the specific dorm and facility work that needs to be done.
Can you please highlight the jobs that you anticipate? Because I think that the governor said that to get these on the street to provide jobs, and I think that is something that the committee might be interested in on each one of these individual projects.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, I don't have a specific number for each one of the projects. I'd like to invite Mr. Kreinheder, who's our senior policy analyst at OMB, who's been working with ICER on some job information for the committee that might be helpful.
For the record, I'm Jack Kreinheder with the Office of Management and Budget. And Mr. Chairman, I was actually just on the phone this morning with Scott Goldsmith from the Institute of Social and Economic Research. And excuse me, the projections that he uses for this type of maintenance and repair work are would result for it's $100 million general funds and about $106 million total funds for the deferred maintenance package. And the direct jobs that he would estimate to be created would be about 700 direct jobs. And I should note that's on an annual average basis, so there could actually be more people hired. In other words, if people are hired for a six-month job, it could be even more than that 700. And counting the multiplier effects of that money being respent in the economy would be about 1,100 jobs.
Thank you for that information. Karen.
Mr. Chairman, it would be good to note that there's, as you look at the individual projects, there's a wide range of deferred maintenance activities that will be done with these funds. Everything from electrical and heating upgrades, plumbing, roofs, replacing windows and siding, energy efficiency, fire alarm and electrical systems. And then, of course, when you look at DOT, we're talking about all modes of transportation, so roads, airports, the marine highway, vessels and terminals. So there's a broad range of projects, including equipment replacement, that will be funded with your approval of this. Most of our agencies do not have the internal capacity to do the work themselves, so they're going to need to contract with contractors in Alaska to do that. In some areas, we do have some facilities folks who can do some minor work, but they're not going to be able to do the bigger pieces of the deferred maintenance package. So I think that with the help of the Institute of Social and Economic Research, getting some idea of the impact on our economy and jobs is very, very valid for the discussion. So thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and go on with just kind of highlighting some of the elements included in the bill. Department of Environmental Conservation is allocated $200,000 to address the deferred maintenance needs at the Environmental Health Lab. Under the Department of Fish and Game, the allocation is $2 million, and they have some specific allocations within that. $850,000 for statewide employee housing needs, $700,000 for statewide storage and shop facilities, the Kodiak warehouse compound upgrades of $450,000. In the Department of Health and Social Services, they have split their $7 million allocation between two areas of their budget. Of course, their Pioneer Homes deferred maintenance, renovation, and repairs for $4 million, and the non-Pioneer Home deferred maintenance. As you know, they operate a number of 24-hour facilities in the Department of Health and Social Services. So these funds will significantly contribute to their backlog of deferred maintenance. Under the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the Alaska Vocational Technical Center and Seward is $1 million of deferred maintenance. That's one of our state training centers. And as you know, it's been operating since the 70s, and they have a number of buildings that have deferred maintenance needs. Under Military and Veterans Affairs, $4 million in general funds and $6.3 million in federal funds to support a number of components within their request for Army Guard facilities, about $892,000, Armories facilities deferred maintenance, $2.1 million, and that's where we get the matching federal funds for that, and then the Alaska Military Youth Academy deferred maintenance of $1 million. Department of Natural Resources is proposed to receive a $4 million allocation of this entire package, $3,480,000 to state parks deferred maintenance across the state, $330,000 for the Plant Materials Center, and $190,000 for the Mount McKinley meat plant safety upgrades. Public safety, a single allocation of $1,350,000 for statewide facilities deferred maintenance. Under transportation and public facilities, in total, that department is receiving $25 million of the entire package, and that is allocated across the various modes of transportation within the department. And they certainly can give you specifics on each one of these, but airport deferred maintenance is $3.5 million. The Alaska Marine Highway Vessel Facility deferred maintenance of $3 million. The facilities deferred maintenance and critical repairs, $1 million. Harbor deferred maintenance, $600,000. And then the highway deferred maintenance package of $16.9 million.
Senator Stedman, I know that this committee initiated a boost in the department's deferred maintenance budget last year that I think provided jobs as well as fixed a lot of potholes throughout the state of Alaska. I wonder if the department might want to comment on that, but Senator Stedman?
Yeah, I'd like to hear a comment on that too also, and we are going a little fast, so they're a little bit ahead of how quick I can turn these pages, and clearly we're talking about a lot of money here and projects around the state, but some of these have some policy issues embedded in them, one of which is harbor maintenance, but I'm only on page about 50. So I don't know if we need to slow the process down and talk about these, or are we going to just have a quick overview?
Go back to Harbors, Senator Stedman, page 50.
Well, I don't know if Harbors are on page 50. I got to find Harbors. I'd like to find out what the...
Harbors is on 27.
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to slow this down and ask the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to come to the table, perhaps to discuss with you specific questions on DOT, if that's the wish of the committee.
Good morning, Senator Hoffman and committee members. For the record, Laura Baker, Admin Service Director for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Senator Stedman.
Page 57 for Harbors.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, could you repeat your question, please?
I'd just like to know what we're doing with the harbors. Are these...
The harbor maintenance, deferred maintenance funding is going to fund the top priority item on our harbor list, and if you give me just a second, I can tell you what that is. That will be the Port Alexander inner float, repairs and replacement. This float's used by school children, and the boarding ramp is not ADA compliant. That project total is estimated at $630,000.
I just had a list handed here on the deferred maintenance, but maybe we should back up a little bit. We spent quite some time dealing with deferred maintenance on municipal harbors, Mr. Chairman, around the state, and we've privatized or had the communities buy our harbors. we sold, or I don't know who bought from what. It's kind of ended up paying, from the state's perspective, fairly handsomely to have them taken over. These harbors that are left are smaller floats, some of which have areas that could be paying moorage and can be supporting these harbors themselves. So I've got a little concern over, from a policy perspective, what we're doing with these remaining small harbors and docks, some of which are virtually private floats financed and maintained by the state.
So. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I'd like to follow up with you, the committee, on that question. We can give you a list of outstanding projects and what the plans are for those.
Time frames on transfers?
We'll include that as well.
Senator Stedman?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what she's asking. On a follow-up, you know, just looking at the list, I guess we can. Maybe we should just get together and talk about the issue outside of the committee. Because clearly I am just philosophically opposed to the state building and maintaining private docks for a handful of individuals that can get their own permit and build their own dock, because they refuse to even pay a nominal fee for the use of the dock, mortgage fees. You know, as an example, Baranoff Warm Springs, I'll pick on my own district, fair. Item number 10. Clearly, there's people that live there, use that dock. They're not interested in paying mortgage fees, and I'm a little reluctant. Elfin Cove is another one. Papke's Landing, we need to have a discussion on that. We're not float. Well, I mean, we can go right down the list. So this is not something that should just idly slip by the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, we will schedule a meeting to follow up on this. I don't have the exact list that you have in front of you at this point.
Well, I wonder if someone could comment upon the funds that we put into the budget to address deferred maintenance of potholes throughout the state of Alaska. I think in talking with my co-chairman, this program was well received. We've had lots of comments. I've received comments from the Dillingham area and wanting additional funds to address roads and road construction. When you're going from the airport into town in Dillingham, that road is really dilapidated, and I know I talked with Mr. Richards about it, and I felt that was a perfect project that we could have some employment and provide improve a road that provides services to the community of Dillingham. I think those are the types of projects that should be addressed either through the additional money that we gave toward repair and maintenance last year, or under this supplemental request. You know, I think that's what the people of Alaska would like to see, because obviously roads are being utilized throughout the state of Alaska and are most visible to the public.
Mr. Chairman, we do have an updated report that we're trying to finalize on how the 12.4 million or so that was added to highways and aviation and facilities operating base budget last year. Part of that money was to use to offset potential supplemental need this year, and the other portion was the added capacity that we needed. So we will have that report to provide to the committee. In terms of the Dillingham Road and other projects, we can look at our detailed deferred maintenance listing that we're including under the allocation in this bill and see where Dillingham is on that and other projects. Additionally, the money that's added to the operating budget that was just added in the budget that started in July, we did have, you know, we're now in the winter season, so there's still some more work to be done on roads this upcoming construction season this fiscal year.
And then on the $1 million that you have in there for deferred maintenance for critical repairs, I wonder if you might go over how that $1 million is going to be spent.
Give me just a moment, Mr. Chairman. The facilities maintenance, deferred maintenance request of $1 million will be spread across the regions, adding sprinkler systems, ventilation systems, becoming EPA compliant in some areas, adding overhead hoist in the Toke SEF equipment building, for instance, replacing failed gutters, water pump house work, etc. Again, we are available to talk about the details of this, and I can go down the list item by item if you'd like, or we can follow up with a list to the committee.
Well, you could follow up with a list to the committee, but the last I wonder if you could spend more time on the $16.9 million for highway deferred maintenance and the $37.5 million for maintaining existing facilities. Those two are close to half of the budget. We can get into some detail on those.
Mr. Chairman, we can get, and we will provide the committee with a list of all the details that we have for, I believe the $37.5 million is the University of Alaska's request, and I know they have a breakdown of all of those projects, and we can get those to you.
Well, maybe we could, this is up tomorrow, so maybe we could have that presentation in more detail at tomorrow's meeting.
Mr. Chairman, oh, I'm sorry.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Baker, thanks for coming up this morning. One of the questions that I have and the concerns that I have, and I'm not saying that, you know, potholes and harbors aren't important, but when you're talking about airports, at least in my district, you're talking about life and limb issues, and I was wondering why only $3.5 million was requested out of a $94 million backlog that you have there, and that there only seems to be three airports that are highlighted.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, when the department looked at the $25 million deferred maintenance allocation, we did a historical review of expenditures or appropriations to the various modes of transportation, and we also, though, looked at our current needs. The current needs in the department of deferred maintenance are almost $900 million. So when you look at that and then look at the portion of aviation, it is a small portion. We did the allocations based on needs of the total by mode. And on the aviation portion, actually in the deferred maintenance allocation, we have a number of projects that were at the top of the list. One of the things with aviation, some projects are bigger construction projects versus maintenance projects. So we do have you know, two-page list or more of I think it's probably the top 27 items that we will provide in the more detailed list to the committee covering rural airport work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Steadman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just maybe we could either get some information today or they can come back tomorrow just on the general process that they went through to identify agencies and how they figured out or recommended appropriations for particular agencies, how much of the items were not brought forward to us that were left behind, and then how this process integrates with last year's deferred maintenance issues, and we reduced the deferred maintenance or maintenance budgets last year along with a lot of other stuff, and we pulled in back 60-70%. So I'd like to get a little feel for the from their perspective on the history of the deferred maintenance, because I'm a little curious as far as, you know, we're still recouping, Mr. Chairman, from the years when we had just a general fund match federal budget or capital budget. general funds to match the federal money we can receive, which would lead me to believe that we probably had incurred through that process a substantial amount of deferred maintenance. And now, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost and we're trying to catch up on that. But not only do we have to go back and clean up from those tighter years financially, but that also potentially hinders our ability to move the state forward and build infrastructure for the next generation.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Ms. Rayfield, would you like to comment upon those?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would like to, at least on part of the discussion. For, as you know, this is a five-year plan that the governor is hoping to get your support for. So we'd be putting in $100 million a year to try to address this backlog over a five-year period. In the proposal in front of you, our general allocation was to look at, for all the buildings across the state and the square footage, we tried to allocate the $100 million roughly based on the square footage by agency. There were some adjustments to that, but generally, I think if we're going to continue to do this on $100 million a year basis, we're going to have to look carefully at how we allocate those, because we do know that some agencies are going to have greater needs in their deferred maintenance areas than others. So the first year, we looked roughly at square footage. That was our target, and then worked with departments on what are your highest priorities to fund within that allocation in this first year.
So what about the allocation between departments? How is that determined? I think that was part of Senator Stedman's question as well.
Within the department's budgets, how did they make those decisions?
No, between the department, you know, between the administration, how much was going to be spent on the administration, fish and game, military and veterans affairs, and DOT?
Mr.
Was
Chairman,
it number of jobs that were going to be provided, or?
It was, again, looking at the square footage of the facilities within that agency that they had responsibility for. We allocated the $100 million roughly through an allocation by square footage. And then within those, Department of Administration was asked to put forward their highest priorities of need within that.
Senator Stedman?
I understand the process. I'm just kind of curious on the, I assume that the agencies though across are not equal in age and equal in condition. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, how you plan on dealing with that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, that is going to be an area that we're going to have to look at carefully as we go down the road over the five-year period. We're going to look at what they're able to achieve. In addition to the deferred maintenance, of course, they do have regular capital requests in front of them. So we'll have to evaluate where they are on their list of deferred maintenance and look at their priorities and try to allocate the money appropriately.
Senator Thomas. Thank you, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fairfield, I see that we obviously are, the intention is to move the 2011 back to 2010, and if successful, would you contemplate that the 2012 through 15 be jogged back, or were you relying on maybe the legislature to make that suggestion that if we do that, we move the other years back to have a more consistent period of time that we're working on?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, at this point, the governor is still proposing the second year would be beginning in FY12, so that FY11 was the first year. We're asking for an accelerated start date on that to get a jump on the construction season. We do know that some of this work is done inside. It's not all, you know, outside or dependent on an outdoor construction season. We will certainly look at where we are a year from now if there's some benefit to seeking or moving that accelerated date up from FY12. But for now, our plan is still to have FY12 be the second year of the five-year plan.
Okay. Senator Thomas.
If I may, one thing that stuck out to me, and I, like Senator Stedman, was trying to get through and keep up with your pace, but I got stuck on the $45 million in ABTEC's FY2012 budget. We went from $1 million 1 year to $45 million in the next year that it would be, and then $8 million, and then it drops off to $500,000. And it seemed like rather than being a more steady flow of money, that is not really half, because I think the budget in 2012, or what's budget is 120, or almost 140 million, I think, somewhere in that range. I tried adding the numbers up quickly. But that seems like a large chunk for one particular facility when there is so much other need, other state buildings, university. You have some comments you care to make regarding that particular lump there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, I think what you see in some of the agency project descriptions is their what they see in their 10-year plan and what they would like to see happen in FY12. I believe part of the AVTEC request specifically has to do with replacement of a dorm facility, and that's about a $20 or $22 million project. That that dorm was built in 1973, I believe, and so I think they're looking at really a dorm replacement in that big number. But so for some of these, you're going to see the universe of that agencies have identified, and as we go through in the 5-year deferred maintenance plan, we're going to have to piece that out, what we can reasonably do, and look at the priorities across all the agencies to fund it.
If I may, just one last comment. That seems more like a capital project than a deferred maintenance project, but I realize it is a deferred maintenance, but the building will basically probably be replaced, is my understanding.
I believe that's the case, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Senator Egan, then Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's more of a policy question that I have, and it all relates to deferred maintenance in the end, but I see vehicle wash rack upgrades, vegetation management, dust control, more vegetation management and ditching, and pavement repairs. But then in my district, during the winter season, you have resorted to more corrosive salt on taking care of our roads in the winter to make them more travelable. And I guess it seems to me like, because the state says they're saving money by using this old-time salt and not using the newer variety of ice control, that we're passing the burden on to the owner of the vehicle. And I just am concerned about the policy direction the state's taking through Department of Transportation. I know it's being used in Southeast Alaska. I know and I've heard that there are other districts around the state that have resorted to this too because of savings to Department of Transportation through their maintenance divisions. And
Ms. Rayfield, do you have a comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Egan, the department is probably the best person to comment on this. I do know that they're having some challenges with, particularly with EPA and other regulatory agencies on our road maintenance and trying to address some of those. So I think that is a concern, and I'll look to the department to comment.
Through the chair, Senator Egan, I think, yes, the department is looking at other solutions for addressing the icy roads. And I think that when we think of the salt content is quite a bit lower than the old style of when people really just salted the roads. It's a mix, a brine mix. So Mr. Richards can probably address that more directly if he's available tomorrow morning, or I will get the follow-up information for you. But I think it's somewhat of a misconception that it's a total salt solution that's being put on the road. It is still a mix and a lot lower content than when people are thinking.
Is Frank Richards here or online?
He had another meeting this morning. Right. He was hoping to stop by, but we can get you the follow-up tomorrow.
I'll wait.
All right.
For sure.
Further questions? Senator Stedman.
Just a quick follow-up on Senator Egan's. I think that concern is expressed in Sitka, Ketchikan, and Anchorage in my travels. So we'll have to have a discussion, I think, on that salt brine item. It certainly concerns people in dissolving their cars. I'd like to reference page 46. I just don't. It's my good colleague sitting across the table from me's bailiwick of the woods here, but there's $190,000 for a Mount McKinley meat plant. safety upgrades, but what is the Mount McKinley meat plant? I guess I need to get up to Mat-Su more often.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stebbin, I know we have a representative from the Department of Natural Resources here that can tell you, can respond to your questions about this particular facility and this deferred maintenance request.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Olson.
Before transportation leaves, I've got a question for him.
All right.
Bring him back a little later.
we'll get rid of transportation first.
Ms. Baker, one of the things in my district is the road between St. Mary's and Mountain Village. St. Mary's obviously has a big airport. They've had 737 service into there in the recent past. And that road, from what I understand, has been less than desirable as far as work goes. There were several people, there was a fatality in the recent past that was there. I was wondering what the state's plans were to go ahead and maintain that road and make it so that people can drive safely back and forth between Mountain Village and St. Mary's.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I do not have an answer for you today, but we will follow up on that information.
Just one comment, Mr. Chairman, has brought to my
attention
that there seems to be some resistance by the people that are in the airport maintenance or in maintenance division there in St. Mary's that are reluctant to go ahead and maintain that road because of a misunderstanding between what is state equipment and what federal equipment, where federal monies are coming from. And so I'd like you to look into that and see if we can get that road maintained so that people can pass safely through between those two communities, especially when storms come up and you're trying to get people out on medevacs and things like of such.
Senator Olson, thank you for your concerns, and we will look into that.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Further questions of the Department of Transportation? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. DNR.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lita Simons. I'm the Support Services Director for the Department of Natural Resources. And through the chair, Senator Stedman, your question was regarding the Mount McKinley Meat Plant. Mount McKinley Meat Plant is an asset of the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund, which is an enterprise fund within the state of Alaska. Mount McKinley Meat Plant is in need of some improvements in order to maintain safety standards and to keep the facility in good working condition.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Stedman.
And I don't know, I wasn't aware of the meat plant, but just looking at the list here, air compressor, boiler repair, bandsaws, meat grinder, sausage stuffers, cutting table, refrigeration system, kill floor equipment. Looks to me like most, if not all of those items should have had a sinking fund available for replacement reserves to cycle them out on an ongoing basis. Like I'm sure that when you were Minister of Bethel, you did that for the automobiles, the city of Bethel, pretty common practice. So do they have a process in place to replace their equipment as it wears out?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, not that I'm aware of. Again, this is an asset of the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund, and the focus is, of course, with that fund to provide agricultural loans to people for that purpose. And I'm not aware that there has been any set aside for this type of improvement.
I think that's, kind of maybe a little minute. I don't want to get into micromanagement, Mr. Chairman, but clearly if it's an asset of the state through the revolving agricultural arena, that they should have policies in place to protect their assets and have those funded so we don't get into a situation where the equipment's all wore out and they come in and we have to totally replace it. I think it's a pretty common practice across all our communities in the state, and clearly at this table we've spent a great deal of time trying to get those policies in place in numerous areas. And maybe we could have the department get back to us on that, on how they plan on dealing with the assets of that particular organization.
Yes, can Did you hear the comment?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, we'll be happy to get back to you on this issue.
Senator Huggins and Senator Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're doing the subcommittee work in DNR now. That will be a topic of conversation because, I mean, the point's well made. Unfortunately, the number of moose we have in our neck of the woods has declined to the point that won't work. Number of cows, that's declined, so that won't work. But we still have some demand for meat processing, and you see reflective here. But the system needs to work, and it shouldn't be just all come due at one time. So you're doing everything except building a new building.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Huggins. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In follow-up to the Senator Huggins' point, I think that the value of the Mount McKinley meat plant is valuable. I have used it myself, and in the past they've been using help from the correctional facility to go ahead and provide work for them, but also in a processing plant that I've sent reindeer down to go ahead and have them processed. I think it's been a very valuable asset. I just feel bad that the wear and tear has come to this point at this point. But I think we should continue on and continue to fund it.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Further questions on the maintenance list that's before us today?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to mention that we did not reflect the request for the Alaska court system. It's $2.5 million for deferred maintenance, and I believe in the backup that they have a list of the projects and priorities for deferred maintenance within the court system's budget. So that's also within your packet.
Okay. Further questions on the presentation? My only comment is that we've had a revised update that shows that in 2010 we're going to have $2.2 billion worth of reserves, and the Senate bipartisan working group proposed to save $1.5 billion of the $2.2 billion, and the governor has agreed with that and put that forward. So we are having being responsible and putting a vast majority of the additional dollars that we will anticipate this fiscal year in 2010 into savings. The roller coaster effect on the state's budget may not necessitate the $100 million for the next 5 years or 4 years. And while we do have the funds, maybe we should think twice about making those expenditures today versus later when we don't know what the price of oil is going to be, especially given the fact that we are being quite responsible and saving $1.5 billion of those additional revenues. With that, we'll move on to the next budget, the next piece of legislation. Senator Thomas.
Just one short thing. I found, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I found in some of the areas, some of the departments, you had the total estimated deferred maintenance as a number. I would find that helpful in the future to kind of track on what we're doing in the future as we whittle them down. It would be helpful for me. It wasn't in all, but there were a couple that I noticed that it did have the anticipated or expected or what currently was the deferred maintenance. So I would find that a helpful number to maybe be carried forward. So just a comment anyhow.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Yeah, we have a brief at ease.
Send at ease. call the meeting back to order. Before us is Senate Bill 254, Supplemental Capital and Other Appropriations, for its first hearing in the Senate Finance Committee. Maybe we could take it a little bit slower so the committee members can follow the presentation. With that, I'll turn it over to Karen Rayfield for the overview on Senate Bill 254.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Karen Rayfield for the record. I apologize for moving so swiftly. I know we have a lot to cover. I'll try to do a high-level overview of the supplemental bill, the regular supplemental bill that's in front of you, and I know that you'll have detailed questions along the way. So my approach was going to be to just highlight the various sections, what's in the bill, flag some things for you, but if you have specific questions, again, I have agency representatives in the room and some online. So hopefully that will get us through this first hearing, and we're happy to come back with more information.
Thank you.
As you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, we are proposing to put funding, because of our potential surplus intent, into savings. The public education fund appropriation of about $1.1 billion you'll find in Section 12A of Senate Bill 254 that's before you. The repayment of the constitutional budget reserve is also included in this, and you'll find that in 17A. The regular kind of discussion about supplemental funding has to do with unanticipated needs that come up that were unplanned for when we built the budget and worked with you last session. There are a number of areas that I'm certain we'll be discussing in greater detail, but when you look at the operating components of the supplemental bill, you'll see a request for formula programs of just about $89.5 million. That's for the most part going to be in Medicaid, and I know we'll have some discussions about that. The fire suppression, again, that's a component of the budget that for about the last 10 years or so we have been addressing through supplemental appropriations. There's a base amount that we put in the budget, not knowing, of course, what the fire season might look like. As you all recall, we had a fairly significant fire season this year, and of course April's coming, so we don't know what that might look like, but we have about $35.4 million in for fire suppression. The non-formula agency operating requests are about $32 million of the total budget request, and all of these items you'll find in Section 1 of the bill. There's a very detailed spreadsheet that lists every single item, and then, of course, there are discrete change records that describe in more detail what those requests are about. We have also a couple of statewide items that are included in the operating proposal. Section 12B has to do with moving funds into the Small Business Economic Development Revolving Loan Fund, and also to replenish the Disaster Relief Fund, a $5 million request under Section 12C. There are some specific capital requests. Again, for the most part, those would be emergency in nature. Also address some areas where there may have been some funding that wasn't sufficient to complete a project. You'll see that specifically in the federal request before you. But the total of the capital component of the budget that you find in Section 3 is $58.3 million. It also includes one item under Section 11. So what we try to do in going through and reviewing the supplemental requests is to try to discern, is this a standalone item, or is this an issue that we need to address in the next budget cycle? So, for example, some of the things that you'll see in the budget we have already incorporated or made some adjustments for in the FY11 budget that you're considering now. Some of the items we didn't incorporate in the 11 budget, but we're discussing right now in terms of budget amendments that are due to you on the 17th of February, the 30th legislative day. Example of those would be in the Office of Public Advocacy. and the Public Defender Office. You might recall that in the past few years, we've tried to get an idea of really what the caseload workload increases are within a given year before we make the decision about how much to include in the budget. That's been fairly helpful in the past few years in actually taking down the amount of the supplemental request on an annual basis. So you'll see a supplemental request for both of those agencies in the bill before you, and we're considering now how much or what to include in the amended budget that you'll see next week. Inmate health care is another area which is a significant concern. There is a large supplemental request for this current year based on the number of, I guess you could say, catastrophic cases, cases that are very expensive. We're not able to, as you know, charge other federal programs for health care of inmates when they come into incarceration. So that is a state responsibility. Medicaid growth, another area that I think all of us are very concerned about. We believe that our authorization in 10 was not sufficient, given that what they've seen in the experience and the number and increases of individuals enrolling and utilizing Medicaid. So not only are we coming forward with a 10 supplemental request having to do with Medicaid, but we're also considering adjustments to our 11 budget request that will come to you next week. So those are the kinds of things that we try to do, Mr. Chairman, before we bring you the supplemental bill. What do we do to correct it in the next year's budget, or is it a standalone item that we won't see again? I'll try to just highlight a few of the sections quickly, and then we could get into specific questions, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Okay. The bill itself is 17 pages, 21 sections. As I mentioned, the first section of the bill is the operating supplemental requests by departments, and they do have a section 2 summarizes that funding by agency. Section 3 is where you'll find almost all of the capital requests. Section 4 summarizes the capital funding. Section 5, Mr. Chairman, is a language section, and it's an area that, as you may recall, the discussion about the Federal Matching Assistance Program, the FMAP rate, under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. In order for us to receive the benefit or the higher reimbursement rate under the ERA funds, there's a couple of conditions. One, we cannot change our current Medicaid program. And two, we cannot use those savings to put into a rainy day account. So what we're including in the supplemental bill is language to clarify that our ability to utilize the higher reimbursement rate has allowed us to use those general funds to cover other increased costs in our budget. We're not putting those savings into a rainy day fund. So it's a language section that hopes to capture what we believe is the appropriate avenue to assure the federal government and the Health and Human Services put out some guidelines about how best to address this, and we're trying to follow those guidelines. So that's what that language section is. You've not seen that before, but that is roughly what that is designed to do. Section 6 is a request for funding to implement the arbitrator's decision from March 19th of 2009 having to do with the Alaska Correctional Officers Association. Section 7 is a specific item for pupil transportation under the Department of Education and Early Development relating to Alaska School for the Deaf in Anchorage. You will see that we've also adjusted the 11 budget to incorporate this particular item. Section 8 is a very small miscellaneous claim for actually a minor who was in custody and received some services by the Central Peninsula Hospital. So this is for the Division of Juvenile Justice, $242, very, very small, but it's a cleanup. Section 9, Labor and Workforce Development, is a correction to an appropriation in the 10 budget having to do with $85,000 for pipeline training. Section 10, Department of Law, Judgments and Settlements, that's language that you see every year. At this point, we only had about $28,000 to bring forward to you in judgments and claims. As we receive more during the year, we forward those on to you. Natural resources in Section 11, this is to allow them to use program receipts from the sale of aircraft, estimated about $2 million to purchase wildland firefighting aircraft. So it's just authorization to sell some equipment and replace it. Section 12, fund transfers, Mr. Chairman, this is where we're proposing to transfer the $1.1 billion to the Public Education Fund. And this also addresses the ADA Revolving Loan Fund to the Small Business Economic Development Fund and the $5 million for disaster relief that I referenced earlier. Section 13 is ratifications. Ratification is sometimes called zero balancing. It's a term that we use in the budgeting world to request authorizations to cover expenditures that already occurred and resulted in an overexpenditure of an appropriation. It's with your authorization to ratify those, it gives us the additional budget authorization for what occurred in a prior year. It does not affect cash in this current year.
Ms. Rayfield, can you get us the history of that for the last 5 years? It seems as though this category of expenditures now in excess of $10 million is moving north quite drastically. And what is happening here? Our departments just spending funds that are not authorized because they know the legislature is going to ratify them? And what is the administration doing to keep these unauthorized expenditures under control?
Mr. Chairman, we certainly can get you some history. I think in this year there are a couple of items that are outstanding that I think has caused a number of questions to be asked, which is totally appropriate. The biggest chunk is the $10.3 million ratification for firefighting. Again, this is an area of the budget that we have for the last 10 years, we have used this approach where we have a base appropriation in the budget, not knowing what the fire season is going to look like. We come back to you in the supplemental, as we did today, with a $35 million appropriation based on the estimates from all the firefighting that took place this last fire session. After the legislature adjourns, we have language in the supplemental bill that allows us, because typically we may have fires start again in between April and the first of that fiscal year. So what that comes back to you as is a ratification the following year. So I think because the fire system or fire season was so dramatic last year at the end of 2009, between April and June 30, that $10.3 million represents what occurred in firefighting, and we're coming back and asking for ratification of those expenditures. So that's the biggest chunk of the ratification that I think has caused the most concern. Another piece that's in front of you in the Department of Health and Social Services is significant. It's about, I'm sorry, I just lost my notes here. It's about $7 million, and for the most part, that's reflecting uncollected revenue from prior years. And what you will see in the supplemental bill, and then again in our 11 budget, is what we're trying to correct some areas of the budget where basically these federal revenues were not collectible. So when a certifying officer went in to certify a transaction, she saw authorization on the books for those payments to be made. So they process the transaction, but then on the revenue side, they find out they're not able to collect the revenue. By then, the books are closed. We have to go in to clean those up, and I think that's what you see. Again, it's a very large number. It's unusual for us to have that size of a ratification, but Health and Social Services is implementing corrections in those areas. We've made changes in the budget to reflect where those uncollectible revenues are, and hopefully that will take care of it. Another large item in there has to do with the Department of Corrections. They had overestimated basically how much they would receive from the federal government for housing federal prisoners. Again, in the budget, we have basically reduced that authorization because they're not receiving funding for housing federal prisoners. So these are it's timing, and it's for the most part uncollectible revenue. And I actually do have our Division of Finance Director Kim Garnier here. If you have more technical questions about the accounting transactions, but at this point, I think those are the biggest areas that have caused the most question, and rightfully so. So hopefully that helps explain some of that.
Further questions, Senator Stedman?
What's the ramifications if we don't ratify?
Read the question.
Well, through the chair, Senator Stedman, that is a very good question. I guess what it means is our accounting system cleanup will not be very cleaned up. I will ask Kim Garnero if she can give you a more appropriate answer on that.
Would the departments have to eat those costs in their current budget?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain that we can go back that many years. I think the statute prohibits it.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kim Garnero, and I serve as the Director of the Division of Finance. Departments can't eat expenditures from previous years that have now gone bad due to uncollectible receivables because of the legal sanctity of the appropriations. The appropriation level at which the legislature makes the language locks the accounting system and the users of those funds at that legal level. So there's no way to, that's why you see these little one pennies and stuff like that. We can't cross at the legal level. The reason that they can't go back and collect the revenues is most of the time, I mean, by the time they figure out the revenues have gone bad, these grants are closed. There is nobody to bill for those dollars.
Senator Stedman?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, it just reminds me of the struggle we've had with the Marine Highway System, trying to get them to be more compliant with the legislative appropriations that are made versus and this is a couple of years, so we've made some progress with them. That they follow the appropriation procedures in place, and not just do what they want and come back to us and expect a rubber stamp.
Well, if we can get the history, completely understand the the problems with the fire suppression and with the. So, to some extent with the correctional officers, but it would be interesting to see what the ratifications have been the last 5 years and what direction are we going and how are we planning to correct these unratified expenditures by the departments. We are the appropriating body, and these are obviously expenditures that have not been appropriated by this legislature or previous legislature.
Mr. Chairman, we're happy to get you the history of what's transpired with ratifications. I think it's important because the key thing in my mind that we can do to avoid this in the future is make sure as we are building the budgets to look very carefully at the revenues that we're using because we did approve an authorization of these expenditures, and then they ended up not being available. So we need to look carefully and make sure that what we are building into the budget is actually something that we can recover and use for the, for those purposes. So where we've identified these areas through the ratification process as problems, we're trying to correct the authorization and get it right in the budget document. So you'll see that. You'll see several corrections proposed in the supplemental bill, and you'll see several corrections proposed in the 11 budget to address this issue.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yes.
$481,000 of ratifications that's related to several departments, including that Department of Corrections one, is a one-time cleanup of our accounting system receivables. I mean, that accounting system is 25 years old, and this is the first time we've gone out and verified revenues that have been recorded but not collected. And I actually was pretty surprised it was such a small number of uncollectible receivables out there.
Over that time, over that
amount. Over the inception to date for the accounting system. And it is a one-time. We do intend to keep these reconciled annually going forward.
All right. Please proceed, Ms. Rayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 14, again, a very small correction to allow the Department of Law to address receipt of restitution in juvenile cases. It's just a small insert of language to allow them to do that. The state debt and other obligations, there are some adjustments there to address International Airport Revenue Fund and recommendations from their bond council of being able to actually minimize the revenue needed from their customers within the international airport. So they are proposing some transfers there. Section 16, Mr. Chairman, extends the lapse for the in-state gas pipeline appropriation. You may recall in the current year budget that was scheduled to lapse on February 28th of 2010. We're asking for the authority or extending that lapse date to the end of the fiscal year, June 30, 2010. The work is ongoing. I believe Mr. Swenson is also available online if the committee has specific questions about that.
Senator Stidman has a question on that item.
Well, I think on that item, I think that might be a special topic for us to discuss sometime. Just that in particular, because it's a fairly large issue, even though the language in the bill is very simple, just the date extension.
And I believe we short-funded that so that the department could come back and justify what they've accomplished. And I don't see, I think it was short-funded by some $3 million, and there's no need for that additional $3 million at this time?
Mr. Chairman, the in-state pipeline coordinator has not asked for additional funds in the current year. We have some existing contracts in place and work is ongoing. We do have $6.5 million requested in the 11 budget to continue the efforts, but we're not requesting an increase in the appropriation. At this time, we're just asking for the extension so we can continue to do the work.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Section 17 has to do with the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Of course, this is the repayment provision. A couple other things that are in this section have to do with the management of the funds. We're proposing, since we're wanting to pay off what we owe the CBR, we don't want to draw from it for management of the funds. So we're proposing to replace the management with general fund. So you'll see that it's $1,673,000 that would be a general fund appropriation rather than a CBR appropriation. This also authorizes a draw from the statutory budget reserve if for some reason in FY10 revenues are not sufficient to cover expenditures. So rather than a CBR draw, we're putting in some language that would allow a statutory budget reserve draw. The Section 18.
Senator Stidman.
Could we get a little more clarification on the $1.6 million? Is that the cost of handling the $400 million over the next 90 days or however long it is till the end of the year once they get their hands on it? Or is there, this is just part of the pool of funds that are already under management by Department of Revenue?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, we can get more information on that. It's my understanding is it's their management fees for the entirety of the CBR. So we're in FY10, we're suggesting that we do the fund switch to general fund, and then in the amended budget, we'll be proposing the same thing.
And what's the justification? Is it because the administration doesn't believe that we would get a three-quarter vote in the legislature from the CBR, and that's why you're asking that those funds be switched to general funds, or is there another reason?
Mr. Chairman, the reason is that if our goal is to preserve the CBR, we're repaying the CBR, our intent is to not draw from the CBR for the management of the funds. I mean, certainly that's a discussion that we can have, but our goal was to restore the CBR and not draw from it.
Senator Stedman?
Mr. Chairman, I'd recommend at some point this session we have a discussion on what we're going to do with our savings and structure it as it's sitting at in the neighborhood of $10 billion. And we've had forecasts that it could go to 20, although I think it's a little optimistic. But clearly, if it ends up at 13, 14, 15 billion, that's a sizable chunk of money, which is a lot different than the ongoing cash flow management to operate the state year by year.
Thank you for those comments, Senator Stedman. Ms. Rayfield, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, just a few more sections. Section 18, just regular lapse provisions for capital projects, basically that they extend for the life of the project. And then also that our appropriations requested in Section 12, the deposit to the Public Education Fund do not lapse their capitalizations of funds. Section 19 is a repeal of, as you may recall, in the appropriation bill this year, Section 43C, known as the 17B provision. We do not believe that provision is necessary given our objective here to repay the CBR. We don't want to have any drawing from the CBR, so we're proposing that be repealed. Section 20 is an immediate effective date on the pupil transportation section. Although I have talked with the department about that, I don't know that we absolutely have to have an immediate effective date. I think when the bill passes, that's sufficient. The Anchorage School District is having to pay this out of their operating fund right at the moment. So that will be important for them, but I don't know that it requires its own effective date clause. And Section 21 is that the act takes effect April 18th. So, Mr. Chairman, that's a high-level overview. We haven't got into any of the specifics in the spreadsheet. I don't know if you would like to go through it agency by agency, or if you just would like.
Senator Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Rayfield, could we go back to Section 6, Department of Corrections? It's the bargaining agreement payment there. To Department of Corrections, isn't it typical that it would be the Department of Administration? Why is it Department of Corrections? And then would there be an adjustment or some sort of note of this in the FY11 budget of the agreement moving forward?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ellis, what this represents is the actual, if the legislature approves this, these funds would be allocated to the personal services components within the Department of Corrections budget in order to pay the increased wages, what's incorporated in the decision, in the arbitrator's decision. So that's why it's to the Department of Corrections. Then we go in and spread that $3 million where their personal services costs are within their budget. At this moment, I believe where we are with this decision is it's before the legislature. If the legislature chooses to approve this funding, then we would need to amend the 11 budget to continue that, because I believe it's a three-year agreement.
So if it were any other, Mr. Chairman, if I could, if it were any other department, it would, thank you, it would be in a section relating to that department as opposed to the Department of Administration. I've just always thought of Annette Kreitzer as the one who handles the pays.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ellis, when we get a large bargaining unit agreement for, say, GGU or SU, and it covers all departments, what you'll see is a single section that allocates across all, you know, all of the agencies and the funding sources, and then we go spread it within in the budget if it's approved by the legislature. So that might be why it looks a little different in the way it's presented here. But since the correctional officers is one single agency, that's how it's appearing in the.
Thank you.
Brief Eddies. We will be going over in more detail and on this particular piece of legislation and answer the questions on the 253 tomorrow. But Senator Olson, do you have specific questions you want to ask today?
Actually, I do, and thank you for this opportunity. As you look at under Section 11, the Department of Natural Resources, I guess the concern that I have, and I'd like more information on it, has to do with the under Section B there, where it says the proceeds of the sale of the DNR aircraft and surplus aircraft parts are estimated to be $2 million. The concern that I have is, and there's an appropriation request or there's a comment about purchasing replacement aircraft. I'm assuming these are those CL-214s that they use for their water bombing. What are they replacing them with? And if that is the case, why are they selling off the parts and accessories unless they're getting a totally different kind of aircraft?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I'm looking quickly at the backup on that because I cannot answer your specific question. I don't know if Lita Simons could come to the table and respond to the type of aircraft.
And if it takes time, Mr. Chairman, we can meet in my office and make an appointment to clear up specific questions.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Olson, further questions? Tomorrow we'll go over specific questions on these two particular pieces of legislation, answer the questions, and then we'll be having the first hearing on 2011's operating budget tomorrow. So wrap up of what needs to be done on these two pieces of legislation. If you made some notes or flagged any appropriation items, we'll go over those at tomorrow's meeting. Is there anything else that needs to come before the committee today? Closing comments, Ms. Rayfield?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll, if there are specific things that you'd like me to bring back tomorrow, please just let me know and we'll try to make it happen.
All right. With that, we're adjourned.